to exercise, dietary changes, and ant therapy. For more serious cases, antidepressant medication and transcranial magnetic stimulation may be needed. Taking vitamin D can also be beneficial to support people with mood issues, especially for people whose behaviors worsen or are triggered during the winter months, a condition called seasonal affective disorder, SAD. Probiotics can also help. Type 5, anxious addicts. People with this type tend to use alcohol, marijuana, painkillers, sleeping pills, or food to medicate underlying feelings of anxiety, tension, nervousness, and fear. More commonly seen in women, this type tends to suffer physical symptoms of anxiety, such as muscle tension, headaches, stomach aches, nail biting, heart palpitations, and shortness of breath. People with this type tend to predict the worst and may be excessively shy or easily startled. The speck finding that correlates to this type is too much activity in the basal ganglia, likely due to low levels of GABA. Basal ganglia prescriptions are most helpful here, including interventions that boost GABA. Relaxation therapies can also be helpful to calm this area of the brain. Type 6, temporal lobe addicts. People with this type tend to have problems with temper, mood swings, learning problems, and memory problems. Abnormal activity in the temporal lobes is commonly due to head injuries, infections, a lack of oxygen, or exposure to environmental toxins, or it may be genetic. The typical speck findings are decreased activity in the temporal lobes, although we also see excessive increased activity. Temporal lobe prescriptions are used to stabilize activity in the temporal lobes, including boosting the calming neurotransmitter GABA or the memory and learning neurotransmitter acetylcholine, a higher protein diet, and eliminating sugar. Ways to boost GABA include using the supplements GABA and magnesium or anticonvulsant, anti-seizure medications like gabapentin, Neurontin, or lamotrigine, Lamictal. Boosting acetylcholine in the brain to help with memory and learning can include using supplements like huperzine A and choline. Together, these strategies can help with temper control, mood stability, learning, and memory. Change your brain, change your body. 5 types of overeaters. I became interested in weight loss when I discovered that as your weight goes up, the size and function of your brain goes down. That's when it hit me. It's your brain that pushes you away from the table, or your brain that gives you permission to have the third bowl of ice cream. If you want a better body, the first place to start is your brain. Like ADD, anxiety, depression, and addictions, the brains of our overweight and obese patients clearly did not show one pattern in the brain. We discovered 5 different types that parallel the addict types and have the same basic interventions. Types of overeaters. 1. Compulsive overeaters. Always think about food. Low serotonin. 2. Impulsive overeaters. Poor impulse control. Low dopamine. 3. Impulsive compulsive overeaters. Low serotonin and dopamine. 4. Sad overeaters. Associated with mood issues. Low dopamine. 5. Anxious overeaters. Associated with anxiety. Low GABA. Do you have more than one type of ADD? anxiety, depression, addiction, or overeating? Having more than one type is common, and it just means that you may need a combination of interventions. In general, we treat temporal lobe or ring of fire types first, and then it just depends on the primary symptoms. Chapter 17. Imaging changes everything in relationships. Understanding the brain patterns that interfere with intimacy. One of the consequences of being a doctor who specializes in brain imaging work was that I absolutely wanted to know the brain health of the people who dated my children. In fact, if you dated one of my kids for a while, I would subtly make the offer of coming into the clinic for a scan. Fortunately, all of the potential mates who ended up marrying one of my kids were in favor of knowing more about their own brain health. In fact, my son-in-law, Dr. Jesse Payne, wrote about the experience in the introduction of his book, Change Your Brain, Change Your Life, for under 25. I was 21 years old, sitting in the office of Dr. Daniel Amen, father of my girlfriend. Even though I am more than a foot taller than he is, I felt intimidated as he reviewed the scans he had just taken of my brain. I had been dating his daughter for a little more than a year, and apparently agreeing to having a detailed scan of the brain was a requirement for anyone who dated one of his daughters for any significant amount of time. He said it was to make sure that everything looked okay. Right. It was like a twisted version of the scene in Meet the Parents when Robert De Niro sweats out Ben Stiller, except this was very real. Plus, this wasn't a lie detector test. This man could actually peer straight into the inner workings of my brain. As he gazed down at the images and data from my scan, I saw his forehead wrinkle as he frowned ever so slightly. He said. This was not a good start. I see that you can be pretty stubborn and argumentative at times. Does this sound about right? He asked. I knew that my response would shape the rest of this conversation and possibly the future of my relationship with the girl I had fallen in love with. Instinctively, before I realized I was doing it, my arms folded across my chest. No, I wouldn't say that I'm stubborn at all. My reply had an undeniable tone of defensiveness. A hint of a smirk appeared at the corners of his mouth. Are you sure about that? He asked. Crap! My brain had betrayed me. It was the first time I saw a connection between my brain and how it was related to my thoughts, feelings, actions, and behaviors. More importantly, it occurred to me in that moment that if my brain determined my behavioral tendencies, perhaps the power went both ways and I could have some control over how my brain worked. The prospect gave me hope for my future. Some of you might think that wanting to know about the brain health of the people in my life is shallow. I actually got hate mail after the New York Times Magazine did an article on me. The author related the story about getting scanned if you dated my kids. People said I was discriminating against those with mental illness, which couldn't be further from the truth. Jesse's mother has paranoid schizophrenia, and his father committed suicide, both of which stories are chronicled in his book. As with anyone who walks into my clinic, an unhealthy brain scan never meant banishment, but rather a quest on my part to help them make it better. If they were not open to the idea of brain health, that was a bad sign. Over the past 24 years, I have scanned hundreds of couples who've had serious marital difficulties. I have been fascinated, saddened, and enlightened by this research. I now look at marriages and marital conflict in a whole new way as involving compatible and incompatible brain patterns. I have come to realize that many marriages do not work because of brain misfires that have nothing to do with character, free will, or desire. Many relationships are sabotaged by factors beyond conscious or even unconscious control. Sometimes, a little intervention can make all the difference between love and hate, staying together and divorce, effective problem solving, and prolonged litigation. I realize that many people, especially some marital therapists, will see the ideas in this chapter as radical, premature, and heretical. Frankly, I know of no marital therapy system or school of thought that seriously looks at the brain function of couples who struggle. But I wonder, how can you develop paradigms and schools of thought about how couples function or don't without taking into account the organ that drives behavior? Seasoned therapists who see couples day to day in their offices will recognize the truths in this chapter, and I hope they will gain new insights into their most difficult cases through the lens of the brain. Is he just an asshole, or is he being poisoned? Let's start with a couple who failed marital therapy. After spending 3 years and over $25,000, the therapist told them to get divorced. This made the couple very upset because they wanted to be married. When they protested, the therapist got nervous and told them that she knew a doctor who takes care of really difficult people and sent them to see me. As part of their evaluations, I ordered brain spec scans on both of them. The wife's brain looked healthy. The husband's brain looked awful, with seriously low overall activity, the same pattern we often see in our drug and alcohol abusers. But the scan didn't fit the husband's history, because he said he didn't drink and had never used drugs. Now, I know that drug and alcohol abusers often lie, so in front of his wife, I asked the husband again if he drank much alcohol or used drugs. He said, "Dr. Amen, I have many problems, but that's not it." So I turned to the wife and asked if that was true. "Yes, Dr. Amen, he doesn't drink and he has never done drugs. He is just an asshole." I chuckled at her comment, but in my mind, I wondered why his scans looked so awful. I went through the list in my head of potential causes: brain infections, a near-drowning episode, severely low thyroid, or environmental toxins. My next question to the husband was, "Where do you work?" "I work in a furniture factory," he said. "What do you do?" I asked. "I finish furniture all day long." He was doing drugs. In fact, he was doing one of the worst drugs for the brain, inhaling organic solvents. My next question was to the wife. "When did he become an asshole?" "What do you mean?" she replied. "Did you marry him that way?" I asked. "Do you have father issues that you are trying to work out?" "No," she said. "When we first got married, he was great. It wasn't until about 5 years ago that we started having trouble." Then she put her hand over her mouth and said, "Oh my God, that was about the time he started this job. Do you think his personality change can be from his job?" "Yes," I answered. "Something is damaging his brain, making it hard for him to be a good husband." In that moment, Her husband went from being an asshole, whom everyone was telling her to divorce, to someone who was being poisoned while he was trying to provide for his family. And he needed help. The first intervention was to stop the toxic fume exposure. We worked to get him transferred to another place in the company where he was not exposed to solvents, and put him on a brain rehabilitation program, which we will discuss in the next part of the book. With the right treatment, his behavior got better, as did his marriage. I wonder how many marriages are suffering because one partner has a brain problem that no one is aware of. How could you ever be successful doing marital therapy with a broken brain? It will never work until you change the brain. Brain systems and love. In my work, I have seen all of the five brain systems discussed in this book at play within couples. I have found that properly diagnosing which pattern or patterns are present leads to more effective strategies to help couples. As far as I know, this is the first time any psychiatrist has presented a model of marital discord based on brain misfires. You might want to share this book with your therapist and see if he or she is open to new ideas. Let's start by looking at the relational traits of each brain system, both when they work right and when they misfire. Limbic relational traits. When the limbic system functions properly, people tend to be more positive and better able to connect with others. They're inclined to filter information in an accurate light and give others the benefit of the doubt. They are able to be playful and sensual and tend to maintain and have easy access to positive emotional memories. They tend to draw people toward them with a positive attitude. Positive limbic relational statements. We have a lot of good memories. Let's have friends over. I accept your apology. I know you were just having a bad day. Let's have fun. I feel sexy. Let's make love. When the limbic system is overactive, people tend toward depression, negativity, and distancing themselves from others. They are likely to focus on the most negative aspects of others and see the glass as half empty and are less likely to give others the benefit of the doubt. They tend not to be playful. They do not feel sexy and often shy away from sexual activity due to a lack of interest. Most of their memories are negative, and it is hard for them to access positive emotional memories or feelings. They tend to push people away with their negativity. Negative limbic relational statements. Don't look at me that way. All I can remember is the bad times. I'm too tired. Leave me alone. I'm not interested in sex. You go to bed. I can't sleep. I don't feel like being around other people. I don't want to hear you're sorry. You meant to hurt me. I'm not interested in doing anything. Statements from the partners of people with limbic problems. She's negative. He's often depressed. He doesn't want to be around other people. She tends to take things the wrong way. He's not interested in sex. She can't sleep. There's little playfulness in our relationship. Sheila and Joe. Sheila and Joe had been married for 5 years. They both worked and did not have any children. At the end of the day, Sheila was frequently very tired. Most often, she liked to be on her own and didn't want to do anything after work. She usually wasn't interested in sex, except for 1 to 2 days after she started her menstrual cycle. Sheila also tended to look at the negative side of any situation. Joe complained about the lack of companionship in their relationship. He was very upset by her lack of interest in sex and her nonchalant attitude toward it. He felt she was too negative, and their lack of connectedness made him feel lonely. Joe tried to talk to Sheila, but she said she didn't have any problems and he just expected too much from her. Joe made an appointment with me. He said, I wanted to see if there was anything I could do before I saw a divorce attorney. I encouraged him to bring Sheila with him to see me. I first got Sheila's reading on the situation. She admitted to feeling chronically tired, overwhelmed, and negative. She just figured she had a low libido and was destined to live with it. Sheila had experienced a major depression when she was a teenager. Her mother also had a history of depression, and her parents had divorced when she was 5 years old. Sheila's spec scan showed a very active limbic system, and while her lab tests were in the normal range, they weren't optimal. Together, we developed a four circles plan. Biological. Sheila's thyroid, testosterone, and vitamin D levels were all on the low end of normal. Working together with one of our integrative medicine physicians, we optimized those numbers for her. I also added omega-3 fatty acids in a higher EPA ratio. I also started her on a low dose of bupropion, Wellbutrin, to calm her limbic system. It also boosts sexual function and interest. Psychological. Sheila began ant therapy to help with her automatic negative thoughts. Social. We added marital counseling for better communication with her husband. Spiritual. We sat down and had an extensive discussion on Sheila's and Joe's deepest sense of meaning and purpose. Over the course of 2 months, Sheila began to feel much better. She had better energy and focus, and she also felt more social. In addition, her libido increased, and she was more sexually receptive to Joe. Basal ganglia relational traits. When the basal ganglia system functions properly, people tend to be calm and relaxed. They tend to predict the best and in general, see a positive future. Their bodies usually feel good, and they are relaxed enough to be playful, sexy, and sexual. They are not plagued by multiple physical complaints. They are able to deal with conflict in an effective way. When the basal ganglia are overactive, people have a tendency toward anxiety, panic, fear, and tension. They tend to focus on negative future events and what can go wrong in a situation. They filter information through fear and seldom give others the benefit of the doubt. They tend to have headaches, backaches, and a variety of other physical complaints. They have lowered sexual interest because their bodies tend to be wrapped in tension. They often do not have the physical or emotional energy to feel sexy or sexual, and they tend to shy away from sexual activity. Most of their memories are filled with anxiety or fear. They tend to wear people out by the constant fear they project. Positive basal ganglia relational statements. I know things will work out. I can speak out when I have a problem. I don't let problems fester. I usually feel physically relaxed. I'm usually calm in new situations. Negative basal ganglia relational statements. I know this isn't going to work out. I'm too tense. I'm scared. I'm too afraid to bring up problems. I tend to avoid them. I can't breathe. I feel really anxious in this situation. I can't make love. I have a headache. Chest pain, backaches, muscle aches, etc. You're going to do something to hurt me. Statements from the partners of people with basal ganglia problems. She's anxious. He's nervous. She's uptight. He cares too much about what others think. He predicts the worst possible outcomes to situations. She complains of feeling bad a lot, as headaches, stomach aches. He won't deal with conflict. She won't deal with problems head on. Ryan and Betsy. Ryan was a nervous wreck. He tended to see the worst in situations and often predicted failure. He was anxious, nervous, and sickly, frequently complaining of headaches, backaches, and muscle tension. He had been married to Betsy for 15 years. When they were first married, Betsy mothered him, taking care of his aches and pains, and soothing his fears and negativity. She liked to feel needed. After years of this, however, she had gotten tired of Ryan's whining and his tendency to be afraid in even the most benign situations. Ryan's anxiety and medical problems were taking over their relationship. She felt isolated and alone. She became irritable, less understanding, and distant from him. Seeing the love go out of their relationship, she made an appointment for me to see them both. Ryan was angry with her about the appointment. He complained that they didn't have enough money, counseling wouldn't help, his problems were physical and not psychological. Actually, he was right. This was his brain torturing him. And all psychiatrists were crazy anyway. I wouldn't say all of us are crazy, just a bit odd. When I first saw Ryan and Betsy, it was clear to me that Ryan's basal ganglia were overactive. The basal ganglia hyperactivity was interfering with their relationship. When I explained his behavior in medical brain physiology terms to Ryan, he relaxed. I helped the couple with communication and goal setting and then engaged Ryan in his own therapy. I taught him how to kill fortune-telling ants. His were very strong. I worked with him using biofeedback, teaching him how to warm his hands, relax his muscles, and breathe diaphragmatically. And I taught him self-hypnosis. Ryan was a very fast learner and quickly soaked up the basal ganglia prescriptions. He no longer used Betsy as his doctor. He began to work with his physician to address his physical issues and started to predict positive things rather than fear in his conversations with his wife. Once we treated Ryan's basal ganglia problems, the marital therapy became more effective and the marriage improved. Prefrontal cortex relational traits. When the prefrontal cortex functions properly, people can engage in goal-directed behavior and effectively supervise their words and deeds. They are able to think before they say things and tend to say things that affect their goals in a positive way. They also tend to think before they do things, and their actions are consistent with their goals. They tend to learn from their mistakes and don't make the same ones over and over. In addition, they are able to focus and attend to conversations, follow through on commitments and chores, and organize their actions. They are able to be settled and sit still and express what they feel. And they tend to dislike conflict, tension, and turmoil. When the prefrontal cortex is underactive, people tend to be impulsive in what they say or do, often causing serious problems in relationships, such as saying hurtful things without forethought. They tend to live in the moment and have trouble delaying gratification. I want it now. They tend not to learn from their mistakes and to make repetitive mistakes. They also have trouble listening and are easily distracted. They often have difficulty expressing thoughts and feelings, and their partners frequently complain of a lack of communication in the relationship. It is often hard for people with low prefrontal cortex activity to sit still. They tend to be restless and fidgety. In addition, they can be especially sensitive to noise, smells, light, and touch. They have difficulty staying on task and finishing projects, commitments, and chores. They are often late. Many people with low prefrontal cortex activity have an unconscious urge to seek conflict or to look for problems when none exist. I call this tendency the game of let's have a problem. They also like to seek stimulation or indulge in highly stimulating behaviors that upset or frighten their partner. Driving too fast, bungee jumping, getting into the middle of a fight between strangers. Positive prefrontal cortex relational statements. You're important to me. Let's do something tonight. I love you. I'm glad we're together. I love to listen to you. I'll be on time for our date. Let's get these chores done so that we'll have more time together. I don't want to fight. Let's take a break and come back in 10 minutes and work this out. I made that mistake before. I'm not making it again. Negative prefrontal cortex relational statements. I'm only a half an hour late. Why are you so uptight about it? If you want the checkbook balanced, do it yourself. I'll do it later. I find it hard to listen to you. Go ahead and talk to me. I can listen to you while I'm watching TV and reading this book. I can't express myself. My mind goes blank when I try to express my feelings. I didn't mean to have the affair, overspend, embarrass you at the party, make hurtful comments, etc. I just can't sit still. The noise bothers me. I get so distracted while listening, during sex, when playing a game, etc. I need the answer now. I want it now. I'm so mad at myself. I've made that mistake too many times. Statements from the partners of people with prefrontal cortex problems. He's impulsive. She blurts out and interrupts. He doesn't pay attention to me. She won't let me finish a comment. She says she has to say whatever thought comes into her head or she'll forget it. He has to have the fan on at night to sleep. It drives me crazy. She often seems to start a problem for no particular reason. He loves to challenge everything I say. She gets so distracted during sex. He teases the animals, and it makes me furious. She can't sit still. He puts things off and tends not to finish things. She's always late, rushing around at the last minute. Ray and Linda. Ray and Linda came to see me on the advice of their marital counselor. Two of their three children had been diagnosed with ADD, and the counselor felt Ray had it as well. Even though Ray owned a very successful restaurant, he was restless, impulsive, and very easily distracted. He spent excessive time at work due to inefficiency, and he had frequent employee problems, often because he hired impulsively without adequate screening. Marital counseling was Ray's idea because he saw his wife turning away from him. He told the counselor that his wife was chronically stressed, tired, and angry. "She's not the woman I married," he said to their counselor. In my first session with this couple, Linda clearly explained that it was true. She had changed. It was an all-too-familiar story to me. She had married Ray because he was fun, spontaneous, thrill-seeking. She was actually a bit reserved and hard-working. She now felt her life had been taken from her. Her ADD children were a handful, and she felt she had no support from Ray. She said, "When he's home, he's not with me. He's always working on projects that don't get finished. He stirs up the kids after I get them settled down. And I can't get him to pay attention to me. He's so restless. When I try to talk with him, I have to follow him around the house. In addition, Ray had made several bad financial business decisions, and the family was struggling with debt, despite Ray's successful business. He had had an affair several years before they'd entered counseling, and Linda didn't believe she could trust him. She felt isolated, alone, and angry. There was no question in my mind that Ray had ADD. As a child and teenager, he had been restless, impulsive, hyperactive, and disorganized. He had underachieved in school and barely finished high school, despite obviously being very bright. The chronic stress of living in an ADD home was beginning to change Linda's personality. She had gone from being a relaxed, happy person to being depressed, angry, and withdrawn. Something had to change. The couple's Four Circles plan included biological. I put Ray on Adderall, a stimulant medication, and omega-3 fatty acids higher in EPA, which helped him be more thoughtful, more attentive, and more efficient at work. I encouraged Linda to try 5-HTP and saffron to help calm her anterior cingulate and limbic system that had been triggered by all the stress. Psychological. We worked on Ray's and Linda's aunts to start looking forward rather than at the past with regret. Social. They continued in marital counseling, which was more effective now that Ray could focus. I also got involved with the children's treatment to make sure they were on the optimal treatment for their ADD and that Ray and Linda used effective parenting strategies. Many of Ray and Linda's fights were over disciplining the children. Spiritual. The couple identified their sense of purpose as improving their marriage so they could love each other and effectively parent together to help the next generation not have as many struggles. Over the next 4 months, this couple dramatically improved. Even the kids noticed a big difference. Anterior cingulate relational traits. When the anterior cingulate gyrus functions properly, people are able to shift their attention easily. They tend to be flexible and adaptable. They are likely to see options in tough situations. They are usually able to forgive the mistakes of others and tend not to hold on to hurts from the past. They do not rigidly try to control situations. They usually have a positive outlook and see a hopeful future. They are able to roll with the ups and downs of relationships. When the anterior cingulate gyrus is overactive, people can get locked into thoughts, thinking them over and over. They're known to hold grudges, hold on to hurts from the past, and be unforgiving of perceived wrongs. They tend to be inflexible, rigid, and unbending. They often want things done a certain way, their way, and they may get very upset when things do not go their way. They have difficulty dealing with change. They tend to be argumentative and oppositional. Positive anterior cingulate gyrus relational statements. It's okay. I can roll with this situation. How would you like to do this? Let's collaborate. What would you like to do? I'm not upset. It's in the past. Negative anterior cingulate gyrus relational statements. You hurt me years ago. I won't forgive you. It'll never be the same. I'm always worried. I get stuck on these bad thoughts. Do it my way. I can't change. It's your fault. I don't agree with you. No, no, no. I won't do it. I don't want to do it. I have a lot of complaints about you. I've never hated anyone more than you. This will never change. Statements from partners of people with anterior cingulate gyrus issues. Nothing gets forgiven or let go. She brings up issues from years and years ago. Everything has to be the way he wants it. He can't say he's sorry. He holds on to grudges forever. She never throws anything away. She's rigid. If things aren't perfect, he thinks they are no good at all. I don't help her because I have to do it exactly her way or she goes ballistic. He argues with everything I say. She tends to be oppositional. He doesn't like to try new things. Rose and Larry. Rose and Larry had been married for 22 years. They had been unhappy for 21 of them. I was the sixth marriage counselor they had seen. They were a very persistent couple. Larry had heard me speak in San Francisco at a local conference on children of alcoholics. He said when I talked about problems associated with the anterior cingulate gyrus, it seemed like I was talking about him and his wife. He bought one of my DVDs and took it home for Rose to see. Rose was stunned when she recognized herself as I talked about working with couples who had incompatible brains. She had grown up in an alcoholic home. As a teenager, she had problems with alcohol and marijuana, and as an adult, she had periodic bouts of depression. More damaging to the marriage was her inflexibility. She had to have things a certain way, or she'd explode. She was the world's worst worrier, according to her husband. Her house looked perfect. The president could visit any time of the day or night, her husband said. I don't know why she cleans so much. It's not like we're dirty people. She also held grudges. Things would get brought up multiple times over the years. If she liked someone, she was a wonderful friend. If someone rubbed her the wrong way, she would write that person off and never let go of her anger. She hadn't talked to her own mother for 18 years because of a trivial fight one Christmas. Rose never said she was sorry. She tended to oppose whatever Larry wanted to do, and their arguments were frequently over nothing. Larry said, "We argue just to argue." Sex was often an ordeal. The setting had to be just right in order for anything to happen. God help me if I ask for it directly, Larry said. When I asked Larry what kept him in the relationship, he said he didn't know. He had grown up Catholic and felt it was his obligation to stay. He found gratification at work and just spent more and more time away. Plus, he felt Rose really tried. She always set up the counseling appointments, and she was committed to staying with him. I was very surprised that no one had sent Rose to see a psychiatrist. None of her previous therapists had considered the brain to be an important factor in the couple's struggles. They wanted to help this couple with their problems, but never wondered if the hardware that drove their behavior was working properly. Before I tackled this couple, I wanted to see how Rose's brain functioned. I was betting there were brain patterns interfering with intimacy. As I suspected, Rose had one of the most active anterior cingulate gyruses I had ever seen. No wonder she had so many problems shifting her attention. Her brain's gear shifter was stuck, unable to move into new and different modes of thinking. They desperately needed a four circles plan. Biological. I put Rose on the serotonin-enhancing medication, sertraline, Zoloft, to help her mood and flexibility and calm her anterior cingulate gyrus, along with omega-3 fatty acids high in DHA. I taught the couple about how the brain works and how it can interfere with intimacy. Psychological. We worked on the anterior cingulate gyrus prescriptions mentioned in Chapter 13 including distraction and thought stopping. I also worked with them on developing a new perspective about their past behavior and healing the memories of pain. Social. I continued to see Rose and Larry as a couple to help them get beyond the past and support each other in the present. Spiritual. They appreciated the discussion on meaning and purpose to make their family and the world a better place. After 4 months of working the plan, they were much better. They were able to have fun together. Larry was able to ask for sex without fear of rejection. He no longer had to play anterior cingulate games. He spent more time at home because the atmosphere was so much more relaxed. Rose called her mother and reconnected with her. Ultimately, Rose stayed on her medication for 3 years and then slowly tapered off. When some of her problems resurfaced, she tried 5-HTP, which she liked better because it didn't affect her sexuality like Zoloft did. Temporal lobe relational traits. When the temporal lobes function properly, people tend to be emotionally stable. They are able to process and understand what others say in a clear way. They can retrieve words for conversations. They tend to read the emotional state of others accurately. They have good control over their temper. They have access to accurate memories. Because of their memory, they have a sense of personal history and identity. When the temporal lobes do not function properly, people tend to have memory struggles. They don't have clear access to their own personal history and identity. They are often emotionally labile, up and down. They tend to be temperamental and have problems with anger. They often have violent thoughts and express their frustration with aggressive talk. They often take things the wrong way and appear to be a little paranoid. They may have periods of spaciness or confusion and misinterpret what is said to them. Positive temporal lobe relational statements. I remember what you asked me to do. I have a clear memory of the history of our relationship. I feel stable and even. I can find the words to express my feelings. I can usually tell when another person is happy, sad, mad, or bored. I have good control over my temper. My memory is good. Negative temporal lobe relational statements. I struggle with memory. I blow things way out of proportion. I get angry easily. I have a bad temper. My moods tend to be volatile. I tend to get scary, violent thoughts in my head. It's hard for me to read. I often misinterpret what others say. I tend to be too sensitive to others or feel others are talking about me. I tend to misread the facial expressions of others. I frequently have trouble finding the right words in a conversation. Statements from partners of people with temporal lobe problems. He can be physically or verbally very aggressive. She's volatile. His memory is very poor. She misreads situations. He's very moody. She takes things the wrong way. He spaces out easily. She doesn't seem to learn by reading something or hearing directions. You have to show her what to do. Dawn and Shelley. Dawn and Shelley had been married for 4 years when they sought therapy. Don had a terrible problem with his temper. He had physically abused Shelley on 3 occasions and had been charged with felony assault against her. During one of those times, he had been drunk. But during the other 2, he had not been drinking at all. Shelley's family and friends thought she was crazy for staying with him. Shelley said she loved Don and wanted the marriage to work. She was afraid when she thought about staying and sad when she thought about leaving, but she knew the violence had to stop. Don was always so sorry after the attacks. He always cried for a long time and seemed truly sorry. When the therapist learned that Don had had a significant head injury from a motorcycle accident at the age of 17, he suggested that Don see me as part of his evaluation. Don and Shelley seemed to truly love each other. Don did not have a good explanation for his problems. He denied that he ever wanted to hurt Shelley. "I just get out of control," he said. I found out that Don saw shadows. He had many periods of feeling spacey and had difficulties finding the right words. He was very forgetful. He was moody, volatile, and temperamental, and he had odd sensations of déjà vu. Don often took things the wrong way, and he thought many other people were out to hurt him. In Don's motorcycle accident, he had swerved to avoid a deer and skidded on the left side of his helmet for approximately 80 feet. I suspected he had temporal lobe problems, probably on the left, which was confirmed by his spec scan. I knew Don and Shelley would both benefit from each circle of his plan. Biological. I placed Don on carbamazepine, Tegretol, an anti-seizure medication to stabilize activity in his left temporal lobe. We also worked with his diet to make sure he never allowed himself to get into a low blood sugar state. Psychological. I helped Don make sense of the past by understanding his brain. Social. The therapist continued to see the couple and taught them about forgiveness and understanding based on this new information. Spiritual. We discussed Don and Shelley's sense of meaning and purpose, and why they wanted to stay together despite the challenges. Within 3 weeks, Don reported feeling calmer, less angry, and less easily agitated. "It takes much more to get me upset," he said. Shelley had also noticed an almost immediate difference. "He's more relaxed, he's calmer, and he's much mellower. Things don't upset him like before." It's important to remember that there's no rule that says people get only one problem. Some of the toughest couples have multiple system problems in both partners. It is always important to consider the brain when thinking about couples who struggle. Better relationships through biochemistry. One of the underlying messages of this chapter is that many couples struggle because one or both partners have underlying brain patterns that interfere with intimacy. As we've discussed throughout the book, natural supplements and medications often help alleviate these problems. I have seen many relationships literally saved by balancing brain function. While you can refer back to the individual brain system prescriptions in other chapters, here are several additional tips about the use of supplements and medication in couples. 1. Some supplements or medications, such as stimulants, work for defined periods of time. Be aware of this and try to be especially cautious about conflict at those times. If a medication's effectiveness wears off around 8 p.m., do not bring up emotionally loaded topics at 10:30 p.m. 2. Be sensitive to the sexual side effects of medication. Medications that enhance serotonin production in the brain, such as fluoxetine, Prozac, paroxetine, Paxil, sertraline, Zoloft, citalopram, Celexa, escitalopram, Lexapro, and venlafaxine, Effexor, often decrease libido or delay the ability to achieve orgasm. If this occurs, there are strategies your doctor can use to counteract these problems, such as adding ginkgo biloba or the antidepressant bupropion, Wellbutrin. Talk these problems over with your doctor. Also, let your partner know that there may be these kinds of medication side effects. 3. Be persistent with supplements or medications. Too often, people will try them for a few days and then abandon them if they aren't immediately effective. Be persistent. Relational therapy brain prescriptions. Just as with brain system issues overall, it's clear that using supplements or medications are only part of the solution to relationship issues. Based on my brain imaging work, I have developed a number of effective, non-medication, brain system prescriptions to help couples, which I've broken up into the different systems we've discussed. Of course, there is overlap between systems, but I think this is a useful way to think about helping couples. The self-prescriptions here are for those affected by these problems, and the partner prescriptions are for the partners of those affected. Limbic relational prescriptions for self. 1. Spend time together. Bonding is essential to all human relationships. You need to spend physical time with your partner. The less you are around each other, the less bonded or limbically connected you become. 2. Smell good. Choose scents your partner likes and wear them. The limbic system directly processes the sense of smell, and it can have a positive or negative effect on your relationship. 3. Focus on the times you have enjoyed with each other. The limbic system stores highly charged emotional memories. When you focus on the negative in a relationship, you feel more distant from each other. When you focus on the positive in your relationship, you feel more connected. 4. Touch each other. Touch is healing, and couples need to have their hands on each other. Sexual and non-sexual touching is essential to intimacy. It is likely that touch cools the limbic system and is involved with the stabilization of mood. 5. Kill the ants. Automatic negative thoughts, ants, infest and destroy relationships. Do not believe every thought you have. Focus on positive, uplifting, and nurturing thoughts about your partner. It makes a difference to your brain function and subsequently affects your relationship. Limbic relational prescriptions for partner. 1. Don't let your partner isolate him or herself. Even though isolation is a natural tendency in depression, it makes the situation worse. Encourage activity and togetherness. 2. Touch your partner. Back rubs or a touch on the shoulder or hand can be very reassuring to someone who feels alone. Connectedness is very important. 3. If your partner has a loss of sexual interest, do not take it personally. Often depression is accompanied by sexual problems. Work on getting him or her help. 4. Help your partner around the house, with the children, chores, and so on. Often limbic problems are associated with low energy and poor concentration. Your partner may feel overwhelmed and need your help. Many partners, not properly understanding the reality of conditions like depression, become critical and make the situation much worse. Your partner needs understanding, love, and support, not criticism. 5. Help get your partner to the doctor if limbic problems interfere with functioning. Limbic problems are often very treatable. 6. Take care of yourself. It is stressful to be married to someone who is depressed. Take time to replenish yourself. Basal ganglia relational prescriptions for self. 1. Kill the fortune-telling ants. Predicting failure, pain, or an unhappy outcome often causes erosion in relationships. Clear thinking is essential in relationships. Do not believe every thought you have. 2. Predict the best. Looking to the future in a positive manner is a key to happiness. Your mind helps make happen what it sees. People with basal ganglia issues have a tendency to predict the worst, which can sometimes become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Fight that tendency. When you see good things happening in your relationship, act in ways to make them even more likely to happen. Hope for the best. 3. Get control of your breathing. Anxiety, tension, and out-of-control behavior are often preceded by shallow, rapid breathing. Before responding to your partner in an anxious or tense situation, take a deep breath, hold it for 2 seconds, and then very slowly exhale, taking 5 seconds to exhale. After 3 or 4 deep breaths of this type, your brain will be filled with oxygen, you will feel more relaxed, and you will be much more likely to make better decisions. 4. Deal with conflict. Effectively dealing with conflict is one of the keys to relationship health. Whenever couples bury their differences or put off dealing with conflict, anxiety, tension, and subversive behavior result. It is important to develop both negotiation and conflict resolution skills in relationships. See the Basal Ganglia Prescription chapter. It is also important to deal with conflict in a kind, respectful manner. Basal Ganglia Relational Prescriptions for Partner. 1. Help your partner look at the positive side of things. Help him or her predict good things rather than bad things. Join forces to kill the fortune-telling ants. 2. Don't get irritated with your partner's anxiety or negative predictions. Soothe him or her with gentle words or a touch. 3. Pace your breathing to help your partner's breathing. Often, people unconsciously mirror their partner. When you breathe slowly and deeply, your partner is likely to pick up a more relaxed breathing pattern, automatically calming his or her anxiety. 4. Encourage your partner to face conflict in an effective way. Prefrontal cortex relational prescriptions for self. 1. Focus on what you want. Clear focus is essential to relationships. I have many of my couples develop a 2-minute focus statement. In this statement, they write down on one piece of paper the major goals they have for their relationship.